I'm Jeremy Barron, and this is Colt Gennaro Chat, the only weekly English language podcast dedicated to Atletico Madrid and the official podcast of Into the Calderon, SB Nation's home for all things Atletico. My guest on this edition of Colt Gennaro Chat is Spanish football journalist, scout, and podcaster David Cartledge. David Cartledge is the guest on this edition of Colt Gennaro Chat. David joins me to discuss Atletico's 2-0 win over Roma in the Champions League on Wednesday. A big win, but perhaps not for the reasons you're thinking. Atletico is still very, very unlikely to qualify for the Champions League last 16, but they're in it with a chance on the final match day thanks to Antoine Griezmann's stunning overhead kick. We'll talk about that goal in full, Diego Simeone's intriguing team selection and substitutions, where Atletico went wrong before Wednesday and how to fix it, and we'll also preview this weekend's league clash at Levante, a place where Atletico have not won since 2007. Will that streak continue on Saturday? Before we get started with this edition of the podcast, a couple notes. Make sure to give a listen to the Talking La Liga podcast. It's part of TalkingLaLiga.com, which is David's La Liga site. So make sure you check that out, as well as listening and subscribing to this podcast on iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts. If you're on iTunes, make sure to leave a rating and a review. Really, really helps us out. Finally, get out over to patreon.com/ColtGenneroChat if you're interested in becoming a patron. You get some really cool benefits if you do, guys. So get on over there. Patreon.com/ColtGenneroChat if you want to support the show. We'll be back with David Cartledge after this.
It's a nightmare at the moment. We need the top of the table, but it's very much a severe situation where it's kind of masking our real problems. Mm. And we got hammered at the weekend, like absolutely destroyed. So that was kind of a, I don't know, there's been a few, we haven't really been hammered yet. And even when we're winning, the fans were like, we're going to get beaten badly one weekend. And then this was the weekend, we just got absolutely destroyed and we really got exposed for the very bad team that we are. Mm. If we manage to get up by some strange way, because Segunda is like that, oh my God, I think we'd probably be the worst team ever beaten Primera.
Oh man. So you're not optimistic.
So, I want to stay in Segunda. It's far more interesting. I've had some nice away days. I've had some nice trips to places that I wouldn't normally go.
Sure.
So that's interesting. And I really like Segunda, so I kind of don't want to get out. Just the money's appealing. The money of Primera is very alluring to the club. But if it was for me, I'd have another 3 or 4 years in Segunda. I mean, I've watched more Segunda this season than I have in quite a few years. Actually, I mean, I'm working with some clubs, so I have to. But also, in terms of pleasure as well, I'm just really enjoying it this year.
Gotcha. Yeah, there's a lot to like there. It is very interesting, and everyone's so close together at the top of the table. It's pretty fascinating to just watch the table.
So many good players as well, really, really good players. And you're just looking at them and you think, my God, somebody's going to get another gem with these guys. And so it'll be interesting to see where they go.
Definitely. Yeah, lucky for us, there's a lot to watch and lots to pay attention to. We'll get to La Liga in a second, but now let's talk about one of your favorite topics, Atletico.
Yeah.
Yeah. Of course. You have been a rather, I guess, harsh critic of Atleti's play this season. I think justifiably so, because a lot of it has been terrible. But on Wednesday against Roma, especially in the second half, I think they put together one of their best performances in the last 6 to 8 weeks, one of their best performances of the season. So,
yeah.
David, how did they do it? What did they fix? What did you see?
I mean, for me, it was one of the better performances, but I don't think that's really saying much. I really, really liked, I don't know, I'll concentrate on the things where I liked. Maybe that's better, because I have been very, very negative towards Atleti this season, and I think justifiably so.
Yes.
But I've been very negative this season towards everyone, but that's just my view anyway. Yeah, I really like Lucas and Jimenez at the back together. I want to see more of that. So that's starting on something that I really, really liked. But honestly, I don't think it was that impressive of a performance. I know I'm going to get killed at, like, slaughtered here for saying this, but it really wasn't that good. I actually don't think I'm being really negative here, but I actually don't think Roma are very good either.
Yeah.
I think they are. I think how good they are is extremely exaggerated by people. I think they're just not doing much for me in terms of being impressive. And Atleti, I think they just pushed a little bit more, and they were in Atleti were in a must-win situation as well. They had to win, so they kind of had to take a few more risks. They were playing sometimes, I noticed, with an attacking line of five, which was really interesting, but it was a bit of a cluster, and there was no real clarity there. Koke was kind of lost in the centre of midfield, just kind of the game passing by him. And then in the second half, it didn't really change until Correa came on, I thought.
Yeah, which wasn't surprising because Correa has just been awesome this season.
Yeah, exactly. That wasn't something new, you know what I mean? Like, it's not like something we could say, oh, five things we learned from this game.
Right.
We already knew that Correa provides an impact off the bench. He's very, very good at it now. So but I think before, he used to be a different type of player from the bench without making an impact, but now he's a different type of player off the bench who can make an impact. So that's progress from him.
Yeah, yesterday was his 100th appearance for Atletico, which time flies, you know? That was amazing to me. He's already made 100 appearances in red and white. And yeah, I think you phrased it, I think, in a really interesting way. This wasn't at all like a three things we learned or a five things to know. This was just a lot of what we already knew about Atleti, just better executed and with their backs against the wall.
I know we're kind of like desperate to pick away positives from this and say, look, Atleti won. They won by a 2-goal margin. They haven't done that since September, I believe.
Yep.
I think it was September against Sevilla.
Yep.
So 10 games since then, they haven't scored. You know, they've either scored one or zero. So you're kind of like, all right, so something impressive happened. Something has changed. But I really don't think it has, honestly. I didn't really see Atleti particularly, you know, a lot better than they have previously been, honestly. I just thought they maybe attacked a little bit more. They had a bit more liberation to an extent. But the components of which still went right for me. I mean, Torres stood out like a sore thumb. He didn't really do anything all game. Griezmann wasn't particularly impressive. He took his goal really, really well. But he was snapping at shots, and it was a little bit wild before then. Carrasco was getting himself in a muddle often. So again, these are things we just knew already.
Yeah, mostly, and it doesn't really change Atleti's chances to progress. In fact, it actually made them worse. Chelsea's win actually made it worse. Atleti are still, according to 538, 98% to finish third in the group. Just a 2% chance to finish second. Only Celtic and Sporting Lisbon have a higher likelihood of finishing third in their group. But you know, It was a win. That's good. It's good.
It's confidence. So like sometimes these wins matter. It's like when Real Madrid won against Las Palmas. It was finally a win. It was a chance to get some confidence back. And then maybe that's what it was last night for Atleti. So maybe they now kick on from there and be a bit more positive. But personally, I don't think they will. I think they will resort to their old ways. I just think this was a very special scenario. They had to push for the win. They did so, job done, but I don't think it was in spectacular fashion.
Yeah, especially with who they play at the weekend and their struggles against that particular side over the past decade.
Right, so, exactly.
We'll see what happens there, but the team selection was interesting to me, and you mentioned it a little bit. No Godin in a big game for the first time in, like, ever, and Stefan Savic was suspended. So Jimenez and Lucas started. That was a pairing I really liked. I've liked it for a while, even though they never played together. I know you liked it too.
I really like it. It's something I've been pushing for quite a while. I've been wanting to see Godin drop out for a while. Savic, I wouldn't have anywhere near the first team. So it made sense for me.
Yeah. What do you think of Savic? I wrote a column a couple weeks ago about this, how he may actually be better away from Godin, and how he... Atleti could, you know, feasibly point to him as Godin's replacement in a year or two down the line.
Savic?
Yeah.
I really don't think so. I think personally, he's a third choice centre back. He's somebody who maybe steps in for when one of the main defenders are out. I really, really don't see him rising above that level. Sure. I know Simeone was at a point where he trusted him a lot more. He felt he was a bit more assured in games and he wasn't going to commit an error. I feel that's changed somewhat. I don't think he's making glaring errors, but I don't feel he's as trustworthy and as stable as he previously was. And I just think Lucas and Jimenez should be the future of the club and the partnership for the next 5 to 8 years. And I'd pretty much really, really start doing that now and getting those two in games quite often together and really work on this partnership. And that could be something akin to what Godin and Miranda had.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I didn't really even notice Godin was out on Wednesday because Jimenez was just so good.
Godin hasn't been at his previous level,
right?
Personally, I don't think he's been as good, you know. I think the signs of wear and tear showing with him, he's played a lot of high-intensity games. He gives his all, he puts his body on the line, he's played a lot. And there's obviously going to be error treatment in a slight against him. It's natural. He's getting older. Atleti aren't as secure anymore in midfield, so there isn't that much protection for the back four as there once was. So it's understandable. It's not a criticism of Godin. It's just how things have gone. And I just really like the energy of Lucas and Jimenez together.
Yeah, the energy and youth is just outstanding. And Lucas, we've talked about it before. Lucas just does not make mistakes out there. I don't think he's a left back. But even though he's playing left back,
he's phenomenal.
Yeah, he's
just
so good.
Phenomenal. He's the perfect player to have for a manager because he comes in, like you say, he doesn't make errors. He's extremely versatile. He doesn't grumble about not being first choice, even though he should be. Mm-hmm. And in most teams, he would be as well. We've got to remember that. I think he'd walk into most teams, to be quite honest with you. Bar 3 or 4 clubs, I think. He's just a phenomenal, phenomenal player, and he deserves a lot more minutes.
Like, I'd let you have a chance here with Jimenez and Lucas to just be set at centre-back for the next 5 to 8 years, but, you know, that's if they renew Jimenez.
But his contract was 2020, no?
Jimenez?
Yeah, I think it's something that has gone around that, I've looked a lot of accounts tweeting it, and especially people who are supporters of Premier League clubs, they're getting excited at the idea of Jimenez, coming close to a contract in 2018. But I believe he signed his initial contract when he signed for Atleti was till 2018 with around a 30 million release clause. And then at the start of 2016 in January, both Jimenez and Correa had renewals kick in that weren't announced by the club that took them up to 2020. So my belief has always been that he's 2020. It just wasn't made official by the club channels because it was kind of something done under the radar, and those two players at that time weren't particularly first teamers.
That's brilliant if that is indeed the case.
Yeah, and I mean, he's been saying about a contract for life.
Right.
For me, he should have a contract for life.
Yes, he should. Like, after Griezmann's goal, like, just look how amped up he was. This is a guy who loves this club.
Yeah, he's done that a few times now. It's great. I noticed that last night, like you say again, and he just goes off on his own tangent, and it's almost like he wants to jump over the advertising hordes. It's brilliant. I really, really like him in every capacity.
Yeah, he was excellent again on Wednesday. Tomas played right back. Because Juan Fran got hurt again, and Versalco got hurt again. And it didn't start out well. He lost the ball fairly easily in outside his own box in the early going, but he settled down. And you and I have talked about Tomas before and how valuable he already is, and he now is to Simeone. I don't think he's a right back, but he did a job, which, you know, what was needed in this game.
Oh, I thought he was really, really good, you know, and I think Thomas started the season well, but he's drifted a little bit, I thought, and his level isn't as good. But last night he was very, very good, and especially his footwork. His footwork last night was fantastic. It really was. You know, his ability on the ball is, I think, sometimes overlooked because that's what we do. We see Thomas, you know, just going straight to the point. We see an African player, a black African player, and we think physical, strong, whatever. But yeah. You know, Thomas Partey is excellent on the ball, and his ability last night was fantastic. He got out of some very small spaces particularly well last night.
Yeah, something I've started to do is just at the end of every game, I just go back and try to and just watch the passes he makes and look at his passing percentage. It's always in the high 80s. It's all high 80s, low 90s. And he's gotten, over the past year, I'd say, so much better with the ball at his feet. Like, he just has the ability to play accurate passes from really anywhere. And he can dribble a little bit. He's extremely versatile. Like, he's become an immensely valuable player.
Oh, he really has. His status at the club is, you know, and his reputation has risen. And it's great to see somebody who has been handed a chance take it really, really well and work extremely hard. Because, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, you could probably name 10 Atleti players at the top of your head who have come in the last few years who just haven't really done that, who have had the chances, didn't take them. But Thomas has, and he's a sign that a new player can come into this team.
Yeah, it definitely changes the outlook in terms of, you know, Atleti looking for a new midfielder, for like a potential Gabby replacement or whatnot. Definitely changes the outlook there, because you might already have him in this squad.
Yeah, I think he's going to be an important player, don't get me wrong, but sometimes clubs do this, they think they have a solution, somebody is playing particularly well, but that doesn't mean that the book kind of stops with them. I still think improvements are needed. I'd personally sign one, you know. No, I really do think Atleti need a new midfielder, somebody with a bit of stamina, energy, who can also knit together play quite well. You know, if they can get somebody, you know, I love the links with Lucas Torreira from Sampdoria.
Yeah.
For me, he'd be the dream. But if you can't get your dream, then maybe you go below that, and I think Dada from Espanyol would be really good. They've got an obligatory clause of about 10 million on him, so they will buy him, but they're going to be fielding offers because they'll know they'll be able to get 25, 30 million for him. And Dada, I think, will be a good option if they can't get Lucas Torreira. But I think I would go, if I'm a lady, I'd go full pelt for Lucas Torreira in the summer.
What did you make of Augusto starting? That was a bit of a surprise to me, just his second start of the season. He came into the team after Juan Fran was declared out with a hamstring injury, which I'm sure will keep him out for a couple weeks. Augusto, I thought... Well, I'll start with you. What did you think of Augusto coming into the team?
I think he was okay. He did okay. I don't think he grabbed control of the game like he perhaps would have liked. I think it was a difficult game for him to be thrown into, given the intensity of the proceedings. I think that was a lot to ask for a player who's just come back after such a serious injury, and setbacks as well. So, you know, that was rough. And he's up against Nyan Goylan, who's such a, you know, he's all action, isn't he? You know, and he's not the ideal player to face, I think, for anybody, let alone when you just come back from injury. So he did okay, but he's going to need to feel himself back in, I think. And I don't think we're going to see the best of Augusto, the version that Atleti bought, the version that we saw at Celta, who controlled games effortlessly until the new year. Because he's going to need another eight games, at least, to get back up to speed.
Yeah, I pretty much agree with that. It was really surprising to see him thrown in this game, especially with a midfield that is of that quality that Roma have. I was surprised he made it nearly an hour, not because he played badly, but because it's just he looked out of it by like the end. He looked kind of exhausted. And it's a really tough game to throw him into. And he had a goal wrongly disallowed, I think, for handball. So he played fine. It was encouraging, but with the situation, with what was required, it was a weird decision to start him. But Simeone got his subs perfectly right, I think, taking out Augusto off for Correa.
He did really well. Good in-game management. The changes worked really well. Like I said, I think Koke was a little bit isolated in midfield. The game was bypassing him. So the introduction of Correa, I think, gave him a little bit of a bridge to link the midfield and the attack. And that helped greatly because of Correa, who he can run from deep, and he can also work in the final third as well. And that, his change, I think, often lifts everybody on the field.
Yeah, and he talked about Gabby coming on after the game. He said, you know, I think the implication was that Koke's still kind of recovering from his month-long layoff, that, you know, Gabby brought fresher legs, Gabby helped move the attack forward, and I thought Gabby was fine. And then Gamero replaced Carrasco. Gamero got the second goal with a really nice finish past Alisson. potentially Gamero's last, you know, 6-7 weeks at Atletico, assuming he moves in January, which I'm assuming he's going to move in January, but I don't know for a fact. But that was a good goal for Gamero to get as well. He's been, you know, pretty heavily criticized by some of the fans here.
Yeah, he has. He took it really, really well because it was his feet were in danger of getting stuck under Nathan, but he pulled them out really well and he finished. And so that was impressive from him. And like you say, it does look likely that he will be gone. You know, Torres will see the season out. You know, have a swan song of sorts. But Gamero will probably go in January along with Vieto. Be interesting to see if, you know, if both of them do end up going.
Yeah, I'd say it's kind of likely. Atleti need to make some money back, especially after the Diego Costa saga. They need to bring in some money. Last guy I want to talk about was Torres. This was his first start against non-third division opposition since August. And yeah, we both agree Torres is kind of a corpse at this point. But I think just his presence, oddly enough, his presence out there made the attack look a bit more functional. I mean, still a little frantic and without a great plan, but it looked more functional. Griezmann in particular looked much improved.
Yeah, I think he reacted a little bit better to it because Torres can't hold up the ball still and bring others into play. I just think he needs to stop trying to run at players like he used to.
It's so sad.
Because he hasn't got the pace, and his touch seems to be very, very bad as well. When he tries to take it away from players, it's always very heavy, very languid, and that's rough on him. So he just needs to be like a Zlatan type presence and not really move about too much. Just be a figure, just be a menacing figure. Just hold up the ball, back in, you know, bring others into play. You know, if he can get in the box and try and get his head on a cross, wonderful. But yeah, I think his days of trying to run past defenders, which he still tries to do, is very much over.
Yeah, he fell over in the box or near the box about 3 times. He went offside about 4 times. He got dispossessed about 4 times. But he did hold up play really well in the build-up to the Griezmann goal. Lofted the ball into the box for Correa to latch onto. Of course, it nearly
lovely piece of skill. Again, it was very Zlatan-like almost.
Yeah.
It was from a standing position. That's all he needs to do, you know? I mean, I know you're a team who require a lot of running, and maybe a luxury piece, somebody who stands still, is not something that's viable. But, I mean, if they do have a game like this where they're going to have a lot of possession, and they do need to move the ball, circulate it better, then Torres is a decent option like that. But they, you know, he's not somebody who can stretch teams anymore, and they've got to realize that. So, but there was a wonderful pass, yeah.
Yeah, imagine when like an actual like a good number 9 gets in here in about 6 weeks. What that could do for Atletico's attack?
Yeah, it could be. It's significant, you know, for everybody, I think, and not just for that, you know, not just for when Costa comes in for himself, but also others as well. I think we should see a positive bounce from somebody like Griezmann, you know, when he has a bit more movement around him and he's not as isolated as such.
Yeah, because that's been the problem, one of the few problems with Griezmann, as talked about before. Not only is Griezmann, like, Simeone's system has just been doing a number on Griezmann this year. And a lot of the supporters like to talk about, Griezmann's not trying. And that's true up to a point, but Simeone's system has just been hammering him.
Yeah, I've been trying to explain this on Twitter as well when I've had the chance, when I've been talking about Griezmann. I've just been like, right, look, there's 2 sides to this.
Yeah.
That you must look at, you know. Obviously, Griezmann's attitude is not that good right now. It could be a lot better. Okay, I understand that. His head is maybe thinking, did I do the wrong thing in staying? That's evident as well. But I think part of his downturn in attitude, in belief, in confidence, is down to the fact that he is pretty much just a water carrier almost in the team, you know. He is in the centre of midfield. He is putting a lot of legwork in. He is doing a lot of carrying and fetching, and that's not good. He needs to be at the front and close at the goal. For France during the national break, he came alive again, and that was because he was being used in the attacking role.
Yeah, and he was, you know, being used in the system that plays to his strengths. You know, he was behind, you know, a big, you know, more traditional number nine. He was allowed to basically just roam about, play off the number nine, you know,
yep.
spray passes, and he scored a lovely goal against Wales. So it's still in there. It's partly down to attitude, as you say, and it's partly down to just the system and the lack of proper personnel. I think it says a lot that Torres, who is, you know, barely functional at this point in his career, that his introduction into the team made Griezmann look better. I think it says a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. That'll be the most important thing. I think everybody's concerned with Griezmann massively. So, you know, you need to take a boost for him wherever you can get it from.
This pretty much confirms that Torres is going to start for like the next four games, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Unfortunately, yeah. So, you know, you think it's been a long slog, difficult watching. Atleti so far this season. It might get a bit more difficult.
Can't wait. A couple other notes from this game. This was Atleti's fifth straight win on match day 5. Four of them by a 2-0 scoreline. That was pretty interesting. And Atleti's home record under Simeone in the Champions League, which likely will conclude with this game for this season. 19 wins, 5 draws, 2 defeats, and a plus 38 goal difference. Not bad.
No, not bad at all. It does look good on the face of things, and I think it perhaps papers over some cracks there within the team and squad in general. But you can see, you can understand why Simeone is defending the record, defending his team to the death, because maybe he sees that he's picking the positives out. He's as opposed to the negatives, what everybody is.
Yeah, it's an interesting way to look at it. I want to get your thoughts on this. I think you and I agree that despite this result, there are still massive cracks that are being papered over. So starting now and moving on toward January and then next summer, how would you retool Atleti in terms of tactics, in terms of bringing in certain personnel? How would you rebuild this team?
Well, yeah. It's an interesting one. I think there are certain things you can do, and I think you do start off in midfield. I think the place that's been hardest hit, because we've mentioned we've had Thomas come in, but you know, Thiago's left now, Gabby's on a sharp decline. I think, you know, Koke and Saul's roles have changed a little bit, so you need that centre. I think the first piece of business in the summer is bringing a centre midfielder in, a top quality centre midfielder, potentially somebody who can be world class. So I think where I mentioned Lucas Torreira is the man to bring in. And then from there, you know, you can look at other, you know, you have to see how maybe the team performs with Vitolo and Costa as well. So it's hard to, it's difficult to say what they might need elsewhere, but I just really do think they need that centre midfielder.
It's not a bad place to start. What about at right back?
It's a shame, because I think Rosalco is very, very good, and he hasn't been afforded a proper run. So you look at right back, and then I really like Hugo Mayo at Celta Vigo. He's similar to Juan Fran in some senses. His attacking game has improved a lot, so I think he would be a good signing if they're really good, because it looks like Rosalco is going to Napoli. Yeah. And then obviously Juan Fran's decline means that I don't think he should be starting games next season, so you need to start him right back next year as well. So I like that. Torreira, Mayo would be a good place to start. I think that would be a very good start in the summer.
Do you think Angel Correa will effectively be Griezmann's replacement? Because I've thought this for a few months now, that Atleti shouldn't go, you know, splurge on, you know, the hot new thing after the World Cup. I think his replacement's already here.
Yeah, he probably is. Yeah. I think that has been the case for a while, and I think Correa was maybe told that as well. Just like, be patient, and your chance will come. And when it does come, it will be a big chance. And that is quite evident now that he's been shaped into that. He's matured a lot, so that's good from him. Costa's obviously back now as well, so it means that the burden's not all going to be on him. To fill Griezmann's shoes immediately, because I mean Griezmann is going to leave, so you have to deal with that. So what you probably do is you replace Griezmann with Correa, and then you also buy a new talent, to fill the Correa role.
Yeah.
Somebody with a lot of potential, somebody who can come into games and you know, kind of learn with minutes here and there.
Where do you think Vitolo fits in when he comes?
Oh, I really don't like the signing at all, and I feel like it was like a waste of money. And I can see why they've done it, because he's such a worker, and they'll look at him and think, oh, he's now ready, he's now matured. He learned a lot under the Unai Emery and Jorge Sampaoli as well, you know. It makes me almost think that they might even give up on Carrasco, which, you know, I think Gaitán's definitely going to go, but nobody will really notice that he's gone. So Carrasco could potentially be a sale as well. And then they might look at somebody else young to come in. You know, I just really, really don't like the Vitolo signing at all.
I think it would have been really good a year ago, 2 years ago, even 3 years ago. But this summer, it was weird. And based on his form at Las Palmas, I mean, obviously, Las Palmas are a tire fire. But Vitolo hasn't been great. Of course, there's been, you know, there hasn't been any stability, but he hasn't looked amazing there. And it's going to be weird to find a place to fit him in. I have a theory that they're going to move on from Carrasco next summer. I think they're getting tired of his attitude, his inconsistencies, despite his obvious talent. I mean, yeah. I think they may sense a possibility. If he has a breakout World Cup, I think that they may sense a possibility of, okay, we can get $60 million for this guy, no problem. And then Vitolo's role.
I agree. I think they'll look onto it. If they can get that sort of money for him, then they'll be, you know, really, really happy. And I think they've been linked with Lautaro Martinez as well, from Racing as well. And he's this kind of player I had in mind to fill the Correa role for when Correa steps up to the bigger role. He's somebody I had in mind. And I don't know, I'd even say potentially out wide as well, Pione Sisto from Celta.
Oh, he's been great this year.
I think he'd be a really interesting signing. You know, you look at his delivery, you look at how he assists. That would be an interesting one, I think.
Yeah, he's really flourished under Unzué. I think he's leading the league in assists now, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. Yeah. He's doing really, really well in that sense. And you know, I think that would be a good signing. And, you know, even Daniel Vaz as well from Celta, who's going to be on a free transfer. I think he'd just be a brilliant squad player, I think, to have. He knows the league. He's a hard worker. Again, he's got a lot of talent. He's assisting a lot this season as well. If they can get Sisto, Vaz, Torre, a right back in, that looks good to me.
Just take half the Celta team at this point. Just take half of it.
God, I've taken three players from Celta there. That would be... it's almost like Liverpool taken from Southampton somehow.
Yeah, just basically, you know, call dibs on half of Balaidos.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's all very interesting. You know, I would kill to see Odriozola come in at right back. I don't think it's going to happen, but I would to see him come in.
I think that's, wow, that would be crazy if that happened. I think he's going to try and shoot for the stars, and I think he'll leave Real Sociedad and go for a move to somebody like, you know, like a Real Madrid or Man United or somebody like that, or, you know, like really, really top end.
Yeah, because he's certainly capable. Man's he's unbelievable. He and Kepa are going to go to Real Madrid, and I'm going to be very sad.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I really like, you know, Maffeo as well has done really well at Girona. You know, that's somebody else that they could look at as well.
Yeah, if City will let him go, because I think City want to make him part of the first team next year.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if they do, because, I mean, there's competition there, but, you know, there's a lot of talk that they might give him one more loan, but a loan at the high end. So I know Valencia have already had preliminary talks to try and get him in.
That'd be very interesting, yeah, because right back is a little bit of a sore spot for them. I mean, they don't have very many sore spots, but that is one.
Yeah, they've told Montoya to find a new club, so he'll be going, and then they've only got a young guy from the Cantera there, so but who's going to remain as backup? So they are going to look at a new right back, and they're looking at Johnny from Celta as well. So it'll be either Johnny or Maffeo, who they get.
Yeah, it's not even December yet, and they've already told Montoya to kick rocks. That's hilarious.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's crazy. Yeah, that they've already said, and that they're already shopping him about. Yeah.
Speaking of Valencia, what have you heard about Guedes?
Oh, yeah, he's been phenomenal, and it must be galling for Atleti because they looked at him a few years ago when he first came through at Benfica. They had a good look at him and Semedo, you know, about bringing them in. And then Atleti kind of moved away from the whole Mendes, Gestitude sort of, you know, Meriton link up or whatever, you know, wherever banner they go under. And they didn't move in that direction for him. But yeah, I thought he would have been a good player, I think, for Atleti. And, you know, you look at him and he's phenomenal. I live here in Valencia, and seeing him live has been fantastic, and the fans feel like they've got a real superstar, but I think they understand that he's probably going back to PSG, or a Premier League team is going to come in and offer absurd money to PSG to take him away.
Yeah, that seems most likely. Guedes has been just absolutely amazing.
Yeah, Valencia are pretty much just primed for his departure. They're just going to enjoy this year with him.
Yeah, as they should. Let's move on and talk about La Liga this weekend. Atleti are at Levante, where they haven't won since 2007. That's the bogey ground right there. The last time Atleti went to Levante was May of 2016. That was right after the second leg of the semifinal against Bayern Munich. And Atleti lost 2-1. Giuseppe Rossi scored in the 90th minute to dash any hopes Atleti had of winning La Liga that season.
Yeah,
that was a great day. So Levante are back now after, Levante were the bottom side that year, of course, because of course they were, but they're back now. And for our listeners who may not watch as much La Liga as you or I, give us a little overview of Levante, what they've brought to the table this year. They've already taken points off Real Madrid and Valencia.
Yeah. They're just a very disciplined, organized, well-drilled unit. They started off the season really well. I think the high point was a fantastic win over Real Sociedad, where they just destroyed Real Sociedad. Really, they just took them, they just preyed on the naivety of Real Sociedad and really got them on the break. I think they'll try and do the same to Atleti. They'll say to Atleti, okay, you have the ball, you try and play through us, and then they'll try and catch Atleti out on the break and use a bit of the pace they've got. They've got Bardi, who must be watched, midfielder who can just knit together everything in midfield, but also pick a final ball out. They've got Enes Unal now from Villarreal as well, and he's looked lively up front. So those are interesting options I think Levante have got, but mainly it's discipline, and it's probably it's the type of team that Atleti really dislike playing against, because they're just going to say, right, play through us, try and break us down.
Yep, Atleti are almost certain to get a lot of the ball. Levante only averaging about 45% possession over all 12 games this season. They're a pretty versatile team as well in terms of how they can switch formations rather easily. And that's something to keep an eye on, see if Simeone matches up with that accordingly. I think there's a tinge of the unexpected with this Levante team, and they are extremely disciplined. They're a very tough nut to crack.
Yeah, they're looking a bit more confident now because they've had their little blip, but they got back to win ways. I know it was only against Las Palmas, but it was an impressive win nonetheless because they were away from home, so that was good from their point of view to get that result in. They lost to Girona at home. They did lose to Girona at home last time out there, last home game. So, I think at home sometimes they're stuck between a rock and hard place, whether they stick with their disciplined defensive system where they frustrate the opposition, or do they attack? And that is where Atleti might pounce and catch them off guard.
It's going to be an intriguing game for sure to see if Atleti's unbeaten start continues here. Levante and Atletico, however, both they're tied for the league lead in draws with 6 apiece, so if you're smart, you bet on a draw for this game.
Yeah, I hope it isn't a draw, because I'm actually going to this game, so I really hope it isn't a stalemate.
That means it's absolutely going to be a stalemate, you know that.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, Levante have won just three times this season, but that doesn't tell the whole story. This is a really solid team, and you know the three promoted sides are 10th, 11th, and 12th, respectively. It's been a really solid year for all of them so far, and that's impressive.
Yeah, absolutely, and like I say, they can't be underestimated at all because they will take advantage of that.
And Atletico should know that more than anybody because, again, they have not won there since 2007.
Yeah, exactly,
it's
been
a long time. Yeah.
You know, they really, really can't underestimate them, basically.
Scoreline prediction for this one.
I'm going to go and say a classic 1-0 to Atleti.
Oh, you're optimistic. I'm going 1-1.
Ooh, okay.
It's going to be a classic. That's on Saturday at Levante. And then back to the Copa del Rey next week against Elche. And onward and upward. Yeah, Atleti's next month doesn't look too bad. Obviously, the standout fixture is the one at Chelsea, which will determine the fate of the world, apparently. But other than that, you know, Atleti have played pretty much all the big teams at this point. So theoretically, they have relatively smooth sailing from now till the end of the year.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. And that they should take confidence in that, you know, and look, really try and build up something, you know, because the league, you know, there aren't two teams completely running away with it and everything like that. So, and who knows what happens this weekend as well. If Valencia beat Barcelona this weekend, then La Liga might feel like it's on again.
Oh, yeah. All hell is going to break loose if that happens.
Oh, yeah, yeah, definitely. Especially if it's a convincing performance from Valencia as well. You know, if they could really show Barca up, maybe, because I think some people aren't completely convinced by Barca. Personally, I think they're being very good for what they're doing. But if Valencia would expose them, then that would be really interesting.
Oh, it'd be great. I think Barcelona are just going to shade it because Valverde just made them so tough to beat. That's the most interesting thing. To me, they haven't always been convincing, but Valverde has just made them so difficult to break down. Ter Stegen has moved up another level. Umtiti's moved up another level. But Valencia will be, I think, a true test with their pace and with their directness and their ability on the counterattack. It's going to be fascinating.
Yeah, yeah, it's the biggest test of the season for Barca, I think. They're definitely going to have a lot of, you know, they're going to be asked a lot. You know, Valencia is just about at full strength. I think there's only Jason Murillo who's going to be out of the game. Marcelino is also going to be in the stands because he got sent off.
Yeah.
So there's that as well. But other than that, they are going to be at full strength. And again, they didn't have a midweek game because they're not in European action. So they're going to be fresh and raring to go. And Mestalla this year is an interesting place because, I mean, I haven't missed a game this year at Mestalla. I'm almost a season ticket holder. I feel like it. You know that there's a good feeling at Valencia right now. So they'll go into that game and they'll be very much, we can win this. And, you know, and they can. Of course they can. So it's going to be interesting to see how Barca deal with that as well, because Mestalla will kind of like rock like it used to. And when it's like that, it's a very, very difficult place to go. I think even a poor Valencia team before have made it very, very close with Barca and Real Madrid purely on the back of when Mestalla gets up. It really, really does get up.
Absolutely, yeah. And this fixture, usually, even when Valencia are bad, they give Barca a good game. So this is going to be, this will be something.
Yeah.
I think this will be a really, really awesome game. That, ladies and gentlemen, was David Cartledge. You can follow David on Twitter at David, J-A-C-A. You can follow me on Twitter at J-B Barron, J-B-B-E-R-E-N. You can follow Into the Calderon as well at Into the Calderon and Talking La Liga, which is David's podcast and La Liga site, at Talking La Liga. If you're on Facebook, feel free to like Into the Calderon there at facebook.com/IntoTheCalderon. Subscribe and listen to Colchonero Chat on your favorite podcasting platform. That includes iTunes. Please leave a rating and a review, y'all. When people search Spanish football, when people search La Liga, when people search Atletico, when people search Madrid in the iTunes store, your rating and review will make sure Colchonero Chat is seen, which of course helps us get more eyes and ears on the program. So please leave a rating and a review if you like this episode, if you like the podcast in general. Also, if you like the podcast in general, I would recommend heading over to our Patreon page at patreon.com/ColChinerroChat. If you're interested in supporting the show, getting some pretty cool rewards, some pretty cool behind-the-scenes looks at how ColChinerroChat is made and so on and so forth, patreon.com/ColChinerroChat is the place to be.
We'll be back on Monday to talk the Levante fallout, preview Elche in the Copa del Rey, and a lot more. Until then, adios.